morning. Today is Tuesday, September the 12th. Joining us this morning is the Humboldt Eureka.
Eureka Humboldt Visitors Bureau.
Yeah, Executive Director Tony Smithers. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good, good, good. Our quote this morning comes from, well, actually, it's a schoolboy song somewhere in the mid-1800s. You've probably heard the first two lines, but not the last two. No more lessons, no more books, no more teachers, dirty looks. No more Latin, no more French. No more sitting on a hardboard bench.
Oh, wasn't that an AC/DC song or some sort?
It could have been usurped by so many different people. Oh, boy. So what is the impact of the fire? What do you hear? And I know there's an awful lot of different traffic patterns going on right now.
Yeah, there sure are.
Normal. Are you hearing any feedback, or is everybody just kind of understanding and there's not a heck of a lot you can do about it?
There's not a lot you can do. And interesting, you said fire, but it's more than one fire. You know, for the last couple of weeks, the entire western United States has been under
sure,
siege.
There's like 25 different fires in Oregon.
There's
9 or 10.
There's like 70 overall in the west, I saw on the news a few days ago. So it's not like people are in shock that there's fire. And, you know, the immediate impact that we see for us is that, of course, getting between Redding and the coast is challenging. I mean, there's the road has been open for certain select periods of time, controlled traffic, and only like you show up for a date to get through at a certain time.
Right, and heaven forbid there's a long line at the gas station as you're getting ready to go.
Yeah, so obviously that's going to have some effort, but particularly because at this time of year, the dog days of summer, we generally see quite an influx of people from inland looking for some heat relief here on the coast.
Right. Well, and I'm thinking anybody who has the outdoor activities. Jet boats are obviously one. The river rafting is another. That there must be some concerns with those folks. I mean, just even if it's the air quality.
Right. I mean, it blew out their seasons. You know, they're over for all intents and purposes.
And the fishing is gone for the fall. The salmon fishing.
Well, not on the eel, maybe, but...
Well, okay. But on the Klamath, on the Trinity, yeah, some of those other traditional...
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a few good rains might fix things up again, but...
Well, we had the moratorium with the salmon.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's going to be runoff and all kinds of stuff from fires.
Well, that's... You know, we talked last time you were on about Plan B, Plan C.
Mm-hmm.
Has it gotten to that point yet where you are... Not executing the plan, but you certainly have got the plan that you're looking at?
Yeah, we've been really, we haven't been in a quandary, but we've been aware of the irony. I mean, this is a situation where we don't want to bring attention to ourselves by saying, hey, we're not on fire. Or even last week, hey, we're not hot. We were, for us, relatively hot, but we were, compared to the rest of the western U.S., we were... still quite a place to get some relief. But since we're still seeing that good traffic coming up and down the 101, we haven't got any feedback from our hotels about massive cancellations. So it's very much of a wait and see on that plan.
Yeah, the fare dates changing also. Did that change any of the patterns as well?
Well, it's hard to say because it's always during a pattern of or a period of maximum occupancy. I mean, I'm sure in Ferndale it changed a bit, and then that spills over to Fortuna. But basically, through Labor Day, which is when the fair ran, basically through Labor Day, that's maximum occupancy for us anyway. So it's kind of hard to tease that out.
So that'll be just more comments.
Now,
over the next couple of months.
If they want to put it to the end of September, then we would see a real nice impact.
And you also had some Redwood Acres trying to bring back the Blues Festival. Do you sense that there's a little momentum, a little bit of inertia, a little bit of interest, or is this just folks trying to figure out different ways to make things happen?
Well, that's not either or, that's both. And there is, I detect a really good energy going on. And it's not just the fact that forces of nature have helped us in Eureka, at least, take care of some of the blighted properties, which are now just lovely empty lots or soon to be empty lots. But, you know, there's, you know, for instance, there's the old co-op building right across from my office where the new owners have just been working like the dickens to bring that back. And that's
the new foundation and the siding to make it stabilized.
Yeah. And then they've punched some windows in the side of it, and there's, it's going to be open towards the, I'm really excited to see what's.
What is it?
Well, one part of it is a big empty space, and I've heard talk about it being some kind of indoor market.
Like a farmer's market kind of a deal?
Farmer's market, maybe with some more semi-permanent installations. If you think about it, someone can go in there with, you know, a little bakery shop or whatever. I mean, it could be a real European-style farmer's market, which would be so cool year-round.
Right, and to have a standing one would make it so much easier.
Yeah, it would. It would. So that's an exciting thing. But as far as the rest, you know, the owner was hoping to get a restaurant in there, maybe an art gallery. There's all kinds of great ideas.
That's all Old Town needs, huh? Another restaurant, another art gallery.
Hey, go with what works.
I guess. It's always amazing to me how much there is of one type of niche. Rather than getting a broad, there seems to be a specialization. There's a general appeal. You know, you look trying to find different things, and sometimes it's there, and sometimes it's like, no, this is what we do, and this is
yeah. But you know, that's in. There's history there. Look at, you know, history of Old Town. Used to be the center
bars.
Retail.
Let's bring in bars.
Well, that's real history. But you know, even back in the '60s, it was the retail center. Then the mall came in. And then all
you're
that.
You're in downtown, man.
Yeah, Old Town, downtown.
Nobody was in Old Town.
Right. So, true. But what don't you see at the malls? Well, you don't see art galleries, and you don't see much in the way of restaurants. So.
Right. Yeah, not typically. Jimmy Dunn's building, the one that's in Old Town, it's been shuttered now for quite a number of years. Are you in, there's any kind of interest, any kind of activity? Is that a situation with an estate? It kind of seems, it's not blight, which is what it had been, but it kind of seems sad that the real, probably the only one that still is in its original condition of the old line bars isn't being utilized.
Well, the answer is I don't know. I hope something will be done with it.
Well, I figure they're in your neighborhood, yeah.
They're neighbors practically with us. Yeah. But something will happen because, you know, there is a nucleus of redevelopment going on. It'll spread from there.
It's 8:19.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika Thunder Country 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action all season long. Brought to you on KINS in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Tony Smithers. Tony, are you seeing any subtle changes, any significant changes in travel and what travelers are looking for, whether it's a three-dayer or whether it's more the extended visitor?
Well, what we're still dealing with is the unique nature of the American traveler versus anywhere else in the world, pretty much, because we Americans, that good Puritan ethic, we work harder and longer than any other country. So we are, and then with dual income families, it's really hard to schedule any kind of long vacation. And seeing as where we are, our location between major metropolitan centers, you know, a day's travel basically between Portland or Oregon or San Francisco. means that I think for the most part we're going to try and specialize in the long weekend or, you know, the 2-day stay. A lot of the work that we do, for instance, with our partners in Mendocino and Shasta, are about us getting a couple of days out of a longer itinerary for the international, ideally, because they're the ones who come to the U.S. or California with 10 or 12 days
larger commitment.
Right. So we want to show them how to they at least spend two of those days in Humboldt County. But in terms of the other, you know, the domestic market, which is, you know, it's still 4/5 of our tourism, and 3/4 of that is Northern California origin. So we're talking mostly San Francisco Bay Area, Sacramento, and then Redding Shasta. Those are the three main sources of travelers for us. Interesting thing that it's really no longer just about the baby boomers. You know, for so long, you know, the baby boomers have driven most marketing because they're the ones who've had the disposable income and what have you. Now we're seeing the millennials, you know, Gen X and Gen Y, but millennials as well, are developing their own taste for travel and their own particular demands for it. And many of those things are very encouraging to me.
How do they vary?
Well,
or differ, I guess.
The baby boomer was the classic sort of progression of experiences they were looking for. You know, they're materialistic through catered experience. So they ended up really wanting to have, you know, luxury, high touch type of products and services. Baby boomers are really, I mean, millennials are really all about authentic experiences. They want the real deal. So whether it's, you know, hard adventure, if they're going to go river rafting, they don't want a slow boat ride. They really want to.
They want rapids.
They want to do the real thing. And all the outdoor activities that we offer just mesh with the things that they want to do, experience firsthand, and do it themselves. But it also goes to the, you know, the cultural side and dining side as well. They don't want fake touristy experiences. They want, you know, when it comes to food, they want innovative, local, you know, emblematic of the region, real stuff. And remember, millennials will spend a huge amount of, or a relatively comparatively large amount of their income on dining out. So in the big cities, this whole idea of flash restaurants and this crazy stuff that just seems nuts to me is a big part of how they live and what they want to experience when they travel.
What is flash dining or a flash restaurant?
It's almost like a pirate restaurant where they open up just for a night, and a special menu by a well known chef is done. And sometimes it's almost like a secret location. You have to be really wired in to get the invitation and what have you, and then they move on to the next place. It's very hip.
Oh, okay.
So. But just as we're starting to get food trucks in Humboldt County, we'll probably get around to that kind of experience as well.
So they'll like rent a facility for a day and bring everything in?
Right. Technically, of course, you have to have a licensed kitchen somewhere to prepare the food and all that good stuff. But
right, but you could do that like out of the incubator.
Exactly.
And then it would be like a catered event on that day.
Yeah. So it's kind of neat. That and you know, then the other side of that is this whole farm to table. So sometimes that's literally on the farm. There's lots of neat dining things that are done in other areas where you go out and you see the product or the produce harvested, picked, processed, whatever.
And
you
see somebody walks out in the cornfield and they see the ears getting plucked.
Right. But it's not just, you know, farmhouse food. There's a chef and it's really a really high-end presentation.
Yeah, I can see that one. It's not like pancakes out on the farm.
No.
It's a little bit different ballgame.
And I can see that. You know, I'd love to do that. But
so those types of experiences that are out there seem like they're being driven by the marketplace, not necessarily by the business place.
Well,
so how do you encourage or or how do you get the word out? Or is that even part of what you try to do? You know, just allow others? Because I would think if you're a tourist coming through, that's not going to be something that you'll be able to take advantage of.
Well, it certainly could be if it was promoted in a way that were exposed to it.
But that kind of gets in the way of being a secret, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, some of these things are extremely sort of limited and special and secret, what have you. But that may not work for tourists so much. But a thing like a farm-to-table dinner on a farm or something like that.
You could have like an ongoing thing.
Yeah. There's lots of different models of how these things work out there. You know, dinner theater and all kinds of stuff.
It's 8:30.
Do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:34. We're back to Doc Shop this morning with Tony Smithers, Executive Director of the Eureka Humboldt County Visitors Bureau. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Tony, the concept of the experiential and how that is changing, or I guess maybe evolving might be a better term. Do you see that there's a willingness to embrace this or even a need to embrace this locally?
Well, the need will become self-evident because the market drives what business needs to do. It's really not all about what we, the marketing concept. It's what does the customer want, not the sales concept, like what do we have to sell. But you are seeing local business respond to it already. We certainly have a lovely crop of new dining establishments that have been coming up. I can think of three or four in Arcata that have come on board really recently, and some other ones in Eureka, which are responding to changing tastes and demands, just mostly in the local market. Because of course,
so their fare is different, but the experience is different also.
Yeah, I think you'll find that it is. You know, sometimes it's expressed in the product itself, such as small plate, versus the big entree type of stuff. There's a lot of emphasis on the pairing of the food and the beverage, whatever that beverage might be. Highlighting the local is huge, and you see that more and more in local restaurants.
No, I can see that, like Healdsburg, Windsor, Santa Rosa, St. Helena, Napa, I can see that. But that's a different kind of traveler. It's a different kind of marketplace than what Humboldt County has.
Well, there's a lot of people who live near Windsor, Healdsburg, whatever, who are our market for overnight tourism. So, as the taste and the acceptance of that kind of experiential, hands-on product goes, then the demand for it here will grow, and we'll be able to start doing more of that.
Do you think that there's enough of a market to sustain a business doing that for the 9 months when tourists aren't here?
Well, I don't think it's quite 9 months, but...
Well, I mean, enough mass to make it viable for more than one or two guys to do that.
You remind me of that old concept, the wheel of retailing. You're familiar with what they mean by that? Yeah. So our product is becoming more mature, and even our local market is becoming more mature, and people's demands for this it's sort of the wheel rolls around, a higher, more sophisticated product will be accepted locally.
Throughout the year.
Throughout the year.
Yeah, well, you know, as long as we continue to age and don't have kids, there certainly is that change, you know, from the family style to something that's a little, you know, the empty nester, so to speak.
You know, it always blows my mind when you look at, you know, the breakdown of visitor spending, what people actually shell out money for when they go to a place. So hotel or motel lodging, you expect that, and it's a big chunk of their expenditure. But the fact that their expenditure for dining is about twice what their hotel expense is just mind-blowing. So we're always focusing on, oh, here's the bed tax collected. You know, Humboldt is about a $60 million lodging industry from tourism. That means that we're over a $100 million dining industry from tourism.
And few were recognizing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably because there's no way to put a surtax on top of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For the governments to get a stream of revenue out of it.
Probably, because if they were, I'd be getting my share of it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's... What are your concerns? What are you hearing with the increase of the minimum wage at the first of the year and then continuing to tick up? Are there strategies being formulated by any of the individual businesses that you work with? How they're going to be able to keep the doors open? Is this going to be a pass-through for them? Is it going to be automation? What kind of strategies are you hearing as another increase is
around
the corner?
Well, to begin with, I have not detected much of an overall sense of panic. Certainly, these companies are used to dealing with seasonality, so that means that they're following the market in terms of demand and their overhead already. They're used to laying people off or furloughing them when the demand is lower, so that means that they're used to being flexible.
That's just part of their model.
It's part of their model. So the question is, though, are they going to use that as a response to higher wages, et cetera, and with the inevitable lowering of service, right?
Or you hire one less person on the backside, and
right,
everybody else has to work a little bit harder,
so with the inevitable lowering of service. I think there's no way to get around that. So, you know, either some sort of new model, you know, but the fact is we have one area to grow where we have lots of room, and I think that is in rate. You know, we still are behind most of California in room rate. We've seen some nice increases in the last few years. We've got more room to grow there, so we could cover probably a lot of that. We could absorb a lot of that with room rate.
Is it also because we have less tourists coming here, or that, you know, you would think that if the demand was higher, the price would escalate, just normal econ 101.
Well, it has. I can only track bed tax per se. Then we can get some ADR information, average daily rate information from the state tourism office when it comes out. But our bed tax collections in the last 2 years have been upwards of 20% cumulative growth. So do we have 20% more people coming? Of course not. If we're lucky, if we have another 1 or 2% more coming, that's excellent growth. So that is mostly room rate. So to answer your question, yeah.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Tony Smithers.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Tony Smithers. Tony, you mentioned the food-to-table concept.
Farm-to-table.
Did I say food? Yeah, I got close. That was the topic in my head. Farm-to-table. And I know that's something that the marijuana guys are getting excited about also. Is that the norm now? Is that still the exceptional? Where does that concept fit in where you can see, touch, feel, and follow the food product all the way from development to on your plate?
Well, if it's at the very beginning, if at all here in Humboldt County, I mean, I can maybe think of a few operations which have a piece of that. But so if you look to where it's more established, say Sonoma County, you know, that's definitely kind of a hub for this kind of thing. Admittedly, it's probably going to only be something for a small section of visitors who really want to experience that kind of thing.
The high end you were talking about before.
It is a high. It is a very, you know, upper class, high end, so upper income echelon thing. For those folks, then that could be something that really can make or break their experience. If they have a great experience farm to table, then they're going to have great response to the whole destination. They're going to.
So how does that get executed? Do you have a picture of Bossy before she becomes the hamburger, and you and you walk through the whole process? I know there's value added in the equation because that's where that extra is coming from.
But. It's education, and you know, education is the number one reason why people travel at all. Information, one way or the other, it's all about learning something. And there's lots of different. Obviously, if it's an actual farm you're on, you can tour, you can see the operation. You're probably not going to, you know, witness a slaughtering,
right?
But
like the lobster tank, and you have them select a lobster.
Not so.
You back it up and you figure out where the lobster came from and how it got here,
right?
That kind of stuff.
No, so but I think there's probably a lot to be gained from someone who can experience the conditions under which their food is raised, and feel good about. Okay, it's you know, there's no GMOs. There's
Let's be simple. Let's go back to our corn analogy.
Yeah,
you see the field. The stuff is growing there. You see it being picked. You see it being processed and then delivered on the plate.
Yeah, but then also the message of, you know, of the dedication to quality and purity and natural and all that kind of stuff can be given along with the spiel, as it were.
So it's more of the presentation of the product, whether in written form or oral.
Right. I've watched some videos of these farm to table things. I've actually haven't been to one myself, but what you find is there's going to be some experts at the table. So and sometimes they'll have the farmer, they'll have maybe a winemaker, they might have the livestock person who can then really talk knowledgeably about this thing.
So they kind of pop around table to table and share their experience.
So what we need to do is talk to our friends at Humboldt Made, who are the purveyors of all that is good in Humboldt, and trying to get them to get their members, and I'm sure they already are talking about this. So,
well, and get a responsive audience,
exactly,
from the storekeepers,
right? And then the bottom line is, coming back to this whole marketing sense, is that it's all about social media, and people sharing their experiences.
Still got to get the word out.
Different kind of marketing, but it's, man to man, person to person.
Thanks for coming by.
Pleasure.
See you everybody tomorrow.